Welcome Policy Fellow at the South African Institute of Race Relations, Sarah Gon.
Hi there, Sarah. Great to have you back.
Thank you. Going
to pick up where we left last week. I want to talk to you about the state-owned enterprises and the horrific report that came out. I believe that all 11 state-owned entities were audited. Not a single one of them got a clear audit. They were all red, one way or another.
Yep, they were, did not do nicely. I think it was 14 SOEs. Yeah, that is a pretty dismal state of affairs. And the reason that we should be so worried is because the big daddy of them all, Eskom, has, I think it's lost 20, it's suffered a loss of 20 billion rand for the second year in a row and is looked to do the same or worse in the 2020-21 year. So, we are just literally pouring money down a plug hole. And what I find quite interesting about it is what's happened is that over 25 years, the government has sort of run these institutions is not quite the word I'm looking for, but essentially it worked on the assumption that what the Nationalist Party put in place, some of what they put in place needed to sort of somehow carry on into the future when this is not in fact the case. And that particularly goes, I think, for SOEs like Danel and SAA. The fact that they were or are and were state owned enterprises doesn't mean that they should forever remain so, and that with changing times and changing circumstances they couldn't be better run differently or completely done away with and sold out to the private sector, whatever the case may be. The assumption that what was created 40 or 50 years ago would necessarily be appropriate for the government to carry on owning and running just doesn't, it hasn't washed. And so we now have the situation where we've got the infamous Eskom, but we've also got SAA and, it's almost, I'm not quite sure how to describe SAA because everyone, and I do mean everyone, accepts that they are essentially insolvent.
So why did they capitulate?
There seems to be pressure to keep going.
So why did the government capitulate? Why did they agree to that 8%?
I think they agreed. I think it was actually very smart. You see, I think the problem is that the unions made a huge mistake in going for that strike because there is no way, and we all, you and I and everyone knew that there was no way they could get it because it's insolvent essentially. I mean, the fact that the government actually agreed to a 5%, 5.9% amount up front was reckless, to be quite honest. But I think by saying that they would pay that amount, and I think they were going to pay the bonuses, I can't quite remember, if there was money. And the government could say that knowing that there is no money. So they're going to renege, and they're hoping, I guess, to retrench as soon as is humanly possible. I gather the retrenchment of management carries on, and the below managerial levels will start during the course of January.
So against this background of absolute and complete ineptitude, and that's a kind word, we then now throw in NHI to the mix.
Well, am I
living in cuckoo land?
Well, I think my colleagues that have done a campaign and just wanted to mention it, although I know I talked about it on Tuesday at length, but tomorrow is the last day for submissions against the NHI. So we've put in a major representation, and we've invited the public basically to sign up and say if they agree with it or not, and every person is considered a represent, making a representation. But the reason is simply because we do describe it, and the campaign describes it as the Eskom of healthcare. We actually think the only good news is that it is actually not capable of being realized for a variety of reasons, including competence, probity and sheer affordability. It is just beyond comprehension. The problem is that, I mean, we've got the Minister of Health talking it up hugely at the moment. He's doing a sort of roadshow around, I know it was KwaZulu-Natal, I assume he's going around the country to say what a wonderful thing NHI is. It will provide good healthcare. And the problem is that
We're going to lose our doctors. Who's going to do it?
Anything. And people are getting very nervous about.
Okay, so I've just been listening for a change. Well, just out of interest, you and I have had a conversation previously where I actually ran past you this idea of mine that it's taken 49 years. For 49 years, the NHI has been on the plans. Mm-hmm. It's never happened after 49 years. The reason that I think that it's coming up now is that if you can get everybody and the public focus on that, you can very quickly push through something called the Prescribed Assets Bill. Where are we with that?
With Prescribed Assets, we're not in the legislation stage yet. It's very much, you see, it was floated as an idea to kind of suss what the feeling about it would be. We're worried that it will become legislation because
where else
is the government going to get money to pay for everything else with? It's run out of money. I imagine it doesn't want to go to the IMF or won't want to go when
we are
downgraded.
How about claiming it back from the people that have stolen it and putting them in jail? How would that be?
Well, that would just be
a place to get money.
I don't know about getting money. I'm sure it's either been spent or spirited offshore.
Yeah.
Can I ask a thought that I've had? I'm wondering if there's no political will to actually fix things because it comes at too big a political price. And I'm wondering if those in the power are actually waiting for an IMF bailout to then say, well, you see, we have no choice.
I've had the same thought. It's a case of, you know, they have to, because essentially they've made X number of very national democratic revolution choices. And they are unworkable, and they do rely on, if Moody says we downgrade, then we become junk. And one of the, almost the only option, there are other options, but let's say the most obvious option is to go to the IMF. Then they can turn around and say, look what, you know, we can't help it. The only way we're going to get money to improve things for the country is to go to the IMF. Look what they've done. You know, it's not us, it's them. And if that's what it takes, maybe that's what it takes. But it does, for anything to work and to change, requires the state to do a complete about turn.
Saragon, that's where we're going to have to leave it. As always, thank you for your valuable and important insights and look forward to chatting to you next week.
Sure.
Why did you think that's funny? We really mean that.
Why did I think it's funny? Because I thought you would say, you know, well, now that, you know, Chai FM's going to shut down because everyone is going to kill themselves over this news.
Got it, but no. So what we're going to do is we're just going to organize a sponsor, somebody, you know, who actually produces antidepressants or, you know, those feel-good.
Yes, Wellbutrin.
Yeah, but you see, we've got to argue with them about NHI because they may think it's okay because they're going to make lots of money, which won't work because the government doesn't pay. The construction industry is going belly up because people are not being paid.
But the truth is also, Sarah, in a down economy and an up economy, there are different businesses that prosper. But that's another conversation. We've got to leave it there this week. Thank you so much. And God bless and Shabbat Shalom.